Give me this.
I'd like to bring to order the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency. Committee, we're going to start out with, we've got four work sessions today. We will not be working Senate Bill 644. So we're going to start out with Senate Bill 683A. I'd open a work session on Senate Bill 683A. Bob, just a brief description of Senate Bill 683.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 683 is the measure that requires practitioner to refer a patient based solely on consideration of the patient's health care needs and health choices. The measure has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. There are several sets of amendments before the committee, Mr. Chair.
Correct. In committee, we had previously had before us the dash nines, which I think most of the committee was familiar with. We are going to have, after Senator Shields speaks, a description of the dash 13s. So, Senator Shields, welcome. If you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chip Shields. I represent North and Northeast Portland in the Oregon State Senate. And I've worked quite closely with my vice chair on the committee, Senator George, who has been very supportive of this bill. He just received the dash 13s and is out of the building, so he didn't feel comfortable commenting on them. He was very supportive of the dash 9s, which I've talked to virtually all of you about before. So the dash 9s and the dash 13s are very, very similar. There's just a modest tweak to the 13s that I think gets the hospitals more comfortable, and if I I'll let them speak for themselves, but I think get them to neutral, which wasn't the case just a couple of days ago. So you've already heard testimony about the challenges of medical self-referral and how I think one of the fundamental questions for us as we go into kind of coordinated care is how does that work for the little guy? Are we going to make it a level playing field so that the independent physical therapist who might even provide a higher quality care at a lower price can still stay in the market? So in Maryland, they have a very very strong medical referral law that basically prohibits it and says you can't do it if you have a self-interest in the place that you're referring to. Senator George and I decided to go a little bit lighter on that, and what we decided to do is to make it a bill of disclosure, but also a bill that has some enforcement mechanisms so that if you don't disclose, that the patient can go somewhere else if they want to, or you don't disclose that you have a financial interest, that there's actually an enforcement mechanism of about $1,000, which wasn't in the law currently. It also, the amendment also clarifies something that was the intent on the House side, which was that the $1,000 fine would not be for each instance, but would be for each investigation. So, for example, to go back to my days on House Judiciary, if you walked in to shoplift in one place and then went across the street and shoplifted in another, that would be two offenses and you would be considered a repeat offender. We didn't feel like if somebody had made a mistake on a couple of occasions that they should get dinged for every $1,000, but that once the investigation happens, they should get dinged for that particular investigation, not for each instance. Does that make sense? So that's the heart of what we're doing in the dash 13s. The other part of it is that there was some discussion about potentially taking out oral disclosure, which I was not comfortable with. That was a line a little bit too far that I was willing to go, because I think what we should be doing is encouraging patient conversation, not allowing it to potentially through the rulemaking process be put on, you know, page 6 of some packet that you get when you go into a provider on the first day. So so part of this will be punted to rulemaking, and before I go back to my committee, Mr. Chair, I wanted to clarify the legislative intent around subsection 8 of the dash 13 amendments. If you look at page 3, lines 7 through 15, it's designed to address emergencies, and it is designed to address potential redundancies and unintended inefficiencies. So the section A there in subsection 8 creates an exemption if the test or treatment is performed in the emergency room or while receiving inpatient services at a hospital. In other words, if you are on your deathbed, we shouldn't have to go through these extra steps to say that you got to go down and get a CT scan down the hall. That's for emergencies. Section B reduces redundancy so that if you are referred to the same facility for a second time, that the provider would not have to give the same disclosure again and again and again. So let's say you're referred to a physical therapist once, but and then 3 months later you're referred to that physical therapist again, and 9 months later after that, the physical therapist again. You don't have to keep doing the disclosure continuously with that same provider. In Section C, if Provider A refers to Provider B and discloses either that financial interest or the fact that the patient has a choice to go other places, it makes sense that the patient would already know that if I go back and forth from B to A, that that same kind of relationship would exist. So that basically says you're exempt from this if A refers to B, B doesn't have to do it again to refer to A. Right. So again, just to address redundancies. And I really think that's important to make sure that the legislative intent for that particular section is very understood, that it's about emergency situations and getting rid of redundancies. So, there's a chance that we might find that the language still needs to be tweaked a little bit since these only came to us about an hour or so ago. But I think they essentially reflect the tenor of the Dash 9s, which I supported and talked to you all about supporting. And if it helps the hospitals feel more comfortable with the bill, I'm more than willing to encourage you to pass the Dash 13s out, even though you don't have the paperwork, unanimously. And I anticipating concurring, and just because I think all the players know that that we're paying attention. I think if you looked at Senator George's floor speech, he said this is a shot across the bow to make sure that people are not engaging in anti-competitive behavior. And if we find out that the intent of this, which is to make sure that those disclosure points happen, and also this was another point that is in the bill, that once a referral is made and you decide you want to go somewhere else, that the provider can't pull that referral back just because you're not going to the place where either his or her boss says you should go or where you have the financial interest. So I think this is a good piece of the legislation. I would encourage you to pass the Dash 13s and send it on to the floor. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I know we have a couple other people to talk to us about the bill. Is there any questions for the senator? Not seeing any. You're off the hook.
Can I just make a comment?
Comment. We have a lot to do, so
great,
make it short.
Great work on continuing to massage it to the very end.
Thanks.
Thank you.
That was short. Thank you.
Yeah. My cue.
Yes, these long floor sessions kind of compressed us a little bit. So up next on the Senate Bill 683, I believe we had a couple of people, Erica Patio Sullivan and... Thank you. I'll have you introduce yourself because I am not sure I've met you. If I have, I forgot your name. Thank you. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
I'll go ahead and start. For the record, my name is Patty O'Sullivan, and I'm representing the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. And in this particular case, it applies more to our health systems, actually, than to individual hospitals. So you're really talking about the clinics and places like that that make referrals. And as you saw in Senator Shields' testimony, it exempts inpatient and emergency rooms. Let me start by going over the A13s, and there's two. I know that you have currently, or that you were sent the Dash 9s and have probably looked at those and have not seen the 13s. So I told the chair that I would go over the two differences in 13s. I will point those out when I get to them, but I'll give you a very brief overview. Senator Shields already did that, but let me go in order. Section 1 our definitions and just add some additional types of facilities to the common use of the word facility in the medical world. So, and they just apply to this bill. If you get down to lines 16 and 17 on page 1, it also adds some additional practitioners to health practitioner for the purposes of this bill. So these are definitions that are used commonly. So at the very bottom of the page is where it starts about the referrals and what you can and cannot do. And a health practitioner's, as defined, decision to refer shall be based on the patient's clinical needs and personal health choices. And it's very important that you note that the personal health choices are there. We never want to limit a doctor to doing what's right and referring their patients to the best clinical needs. But we also have to put in there that people do have a right to a choice. And as you keep on going, paren 3, starting on line 2 to 7, is current language with just a couple of little tweaks. And we added the practitioner's designee, because in real life, when you get a referral, and I just had a series of referrals for some neck injections, it's usually the doctor says, well, I want you to go to a neurologist and you might need an MRI, so go out front, they'll set you up. And so it's really not usually the doctor who actually physically makes the referral. You go to the front desk and they do it. So we thought it was important that we include designee so that the nurse or the front desk person can actually do the actual, give you the notification. And this is where you see the word orally there in line 6. And we had a number of different meetings, as Senator Shields told you. And this was sort of our last sticking point. And we did have a version, actually 12s, without orally in there. And I just want to tell you the reason why, although we know that the 13s are going to pass. I just wanted to tell you why. When the penalty is new, so now that person at the front desk or the nurse has to tell you something orally, and now that there's a penalty, how do we know it's going to end up a he said, she said? So I'm the doctor, and I just told you I think you might have a brain tumor, and I'm sending you for a CAT scan. Go up to the front desk and get the referral. I hope they say more than that, and they have good bedside manner, but, you know, who knows? And so you go up to the front desk, and all you're thinking of is, oh, my God, I'm going to die. Who's going to raise my kids? Whatever. And somebody tells you this. Who's going to remember that? So we were really apprehensive about the word or. Which is actually current law, and thought that actually a written statement and signing something was really more proof that we told you than telling you. So we would have, so we will do both, because the oral part is just something that people don't remember, and if somebody was to be fined, it's really a he said, no, I did tell her. No, I didn't remember you told me. So that's why we were interested in taking that out. But let's move on, because you're going to probably pass a 13. I've done my due diligence on that.
Just looking for
okay,
time.
So we're just, it just goes down, and you refer, and if you get down to the rules, it tells you there's actually two parts of this. The top part is a financial interest in another place. So if you have a financial interest in the MRI clinic you're sending someone to, you have to let them know that. That's the current law and the current piece. The new piece is letting people know they have a choice. And so that's what the new language on page 2 is designed to tell us that we have to do that. Because there's so many different ways of referring and so many different scenarios, we decided that the actual form and how you do it will be done by rule by the department. Senator Shields forgot to say it, but his intent is that the people that were on this group will also be on the Rule Advisory Committee to carry out the rest of the intent of the language. On line 26, that's where you may not deny, limit, or withdraw a referral to a facility solely for the reason that the patient chooses to obtain it from a different facility. And that's solely, because if there's a medical need, then, and they know that that other facility is not going to meet your needs, then they could say, no, I'm not giving you a referral to go there, or I'm not going to let you wait till you go to Portland for your MRI. You need to go right now. So that prohibits just from saying you can't because I think you should go to our clinic. And so turning to page 3, there is the exemptions, which Senator Shields already went over. And for inpatient hospital, when you're inside the hospital, you go down the hall for the MRI. You don't go outside. And then the very bottom is the actual fine. So the only two concerns leaving this we had, I already explained one was orally, which we're going to keep an eye on and how that will be implemented. And then the other concern would be how this integrates with where we're going in healthcare in general, because we have networks, we have coordinated care in Medicaid, we have, you know, people trying to coordinate care and keeping the electronic records all the same. Oh, sorry, I did not show you the one change. On page 2, lines 23 and 20 to 25, we added from the nines, we added be administratively simple and accommodate a provider's adoption and use of electronic health records so that we were keeping up with the current technology and the administrative simplicity act that was passed in 2011 to keep things simple. So those are the changes from the 9s to the 13s are those three lines.
Thank you.
Sure.
And I appreciate you getting through that for me.
Sorry.
No, that's it needed to be done, and I just am always a little bit impatient as we're looking at the clock always on our last day. But if you'd like to introduce yourself and if you have anything to add without repeating, that would be great.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Diana Godwin. I'm an attorney in private practice in Portland. I represent about 165 independent practice physical therapy clinics throughout Oregon, and we're strongly supportive of this bill. The main thing we're supportive of is that patients are going to be educated, not just by their primary care physicians, but other physicians who have the power to refer to ancillary services, that patients are going to be educated about their choice. And it's an excellent bill. As Ms. O'Sullivan said, the only real difference between the dash 9s that you had seen and the dash 13s is that new language about the rules requiring to be administratively simple. Everybody supports that, and that they can accommodate our movement toward electronic record making. So we supported the hospital's additions of that language in the dash 13s from the dash 9s. The only other difference between the dash 9s and the dash 13s is on page 3, where an internal reference on line 7 was changed from subsections 3 to 4 to subsections 3 to 5. It was just one of those things. But we strongly support the bill. We do have a little concern. It's never been our intent to trip up a medical provider who gives a disclosure of their financial interest in writing, that if maybe the patient didn't remember orally. It's never been our intention to trip up physicians like that. So we think that if it's in writing, that's almost proof that, you know, it should supersede a he said, she said circumstance. But
yeah, perhaps a checkbox saying I received this orally as well on the written form. I don't know.
Oh, but that's a good way. Thank you.
So I appreciate that, and I do need to move on unless somebody's got a burning question.
Just a quick comment again for the
rules. Another comment?
Yes. Mr. Chair, this is really important, besides thanking you also, like I did with Shields. In the rulemaking process, I agree with your checkbox, something like that. We do not intend for this to be a he said, she said. Secondly, I hope in the rulemaking process you will also address people of different languages. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge proponent of culturally competent care, and in the interest of educating patients how this information gets and how they're able to respond that they indeed got this information is really important. Thank you.
Good ideas. Thank
Great.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Samantha, I'd like to stand at ease for a moment. to reconvene, and we're still under work session on Senate Bill 683A. And Representative Lively, could I have a motion on the dash 13s?
Certainly. Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the dash 13 amendments to Senate Bill 683A.
Representative Lively moves we adopt the dash 13 amendments to Senate Bill 683A, dated 5/29/13. Discussion on the motion? Seeing any, is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted. And Representative Lively.
Okay. I move to suspend the rules for the purpose of moving Senate Bill 683A as amended to the floor without a fiscal statement in the committee's possession.
Representative Lively moves to suspend the rules for the purpose of moving Senate Bill 683 as amended to the floor without the fiscal statement in the committee's possession. Discussion on the motion? Seeing none, is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the rules are suspended. Representative Lively.
Okay, I move Senate Bill 683A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Lively moves Senate Bill 683 as amended to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Samantha.
Representative Vega Peterson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Excused.
Representative Kitty Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. Unanimous vote. Consent calendar? Representative Kitty Geyer, would you like to carry this one?
Sure.
Thank you. With that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 683A. And we will open up a work session. Anybody, legislators here? Seeing none, we'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 525A. Bob, give us a brief description of Senate Bill 525A, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 525A is the measure that prohibits a district attorney from accepting fee or otherwise allowing a debt collector to use the seal, letterhead, or name of the district attorney or district attorney's office in their collection efforts. The committee adopted an A5 amendment on May 21st, which replaced the measure and created similar prohibitions on use of seal or letterhead of a public agency or official in collection of debt and created an unlawful collection practice of using name, seal, or letterhead of a public official or public agency. The committee also has a proposed A7 amendment, which includes the A5 and eliminates name of public official or public agency from the unlawful collection practice created in those A5 amendments. The measure has minimal revenue and minimal fiscal impacts, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lybeck, I have a motion on the A7 amendments.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the A7 amendments to Senate Bill 525, dated 5/23/2013.
Representative Lively moves we adopt the A7 amendments to Senate Bill 525A that are dated 5/23/2013. Discussion on the motion? On the amendments, I don't know if we have anybody to speak to this. We sort of spoke about it at our last meeting where Senator Brzezinski did alert us to this change that was coming, and we've just been waiting for the paperwork since that time. So it has been discussed before. Everybody remembers, I'm sure, just like I do.
Of course.
No discussion on the amendment. Is there any objection to adopting the amendment? Seeing none, the A7s are adopted. Representative Wiley.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 525A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Wiley moves Senate Bill 525A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion? Seeing none. Samantha.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Excused.
Representative Kitty Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. Senate Bill 525A, having received the required votes, is passed. Carrier? Tim Wiley? Great. Close the work session on Senate Bill 525A. And we'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 254A. Bob, remind us of what Senate Bill 254A is, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 254A is the measure that defines construction manager, general contractor services, and establishes certain regulations related to those services. The committee has a proposed A4 amendment, which deletes certain information from the list of information required to be included in the contract for construction, and we have an individual to speak to the rest of that amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. I can see your counterpart from the private sector is not with you, but I'm sure he's fine with the bill as well from the conversations I've had anyway. So could you introduce yourself for the record, and if you want to briefly tell us what our final amendment, the A4, does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Simple terms.
Sorry. Attorneys.
Few syllables.
At an hour, please stop me. For the record, I'm Blake Underwood with the Oregon Department of Justice, the Business Transactions Section. I'm also a co-chair of the Public Contracting Work Group that has been working on the legislation that is now 254A for approximately, it'd be 2 years this summer. And if I'll just briefly go through the high points of the amendments. The Dash 4 amendments implement, if you'll recall, there was an earlier work session where I had created a list of recommended further edits to the Senate engrossed version of the bill. So the Dash 4 amendments implements those recommended changes. The only difference between the Dash 3 and the Dash 4 is one word in line 8 of the Dash 4. The Dash 3 uses the term the procurement, and the correction in line 8 of the Dash 4 amendment is now construction. And that's just a factual clarification, excuse me, which arises from the fact that at the stage in the process that this particular provision of the statute is dealing with, the procurement has been concluded. There has been an award, there has been partial performance of the agreement, and so the term procurement wasn't technically accurate. So the term construction was inserted instead. And the construction that we're talking about there is construction under the CMGC contract. So if there's a decision by the owner to proceed with the construction phase of the CMGC project, then under those circumstances, the term CMGC services might include a number of other different type of listed services in the bill. That's the a significant change that that was one of the recommended items that I had in my list, and I think we've done a good job of accurately describing the intent. I'll just mention three additional provisions just for the record, and then I'll be glad to take any questions. On page 2, at the top of the page, lines 3 through 8, there's a description there. The bill at this point in the bill is trying to describe what CMGC services are so that we can capture the CMGC procurement method that is then laid out to make sure that we know what the new procurement system applies to. So in this portion of this definition of CMGC services, there are some items that are listed that we clearly lay out provisions that say this is not included. This is not CMGC. The first item is in, this is section 3, then capital letter I, the contractor's qualifications, the price to perform the work on the project, and the amount of time the contractor will take to perform the work. This is a concept called A plus B. which is a transportation method used primarily by ODOT and FHWA to accomplish certain kinds of projects. There was a term in one of the earlier drafts to actually include the term A plus B in this area. Ledge Council, in its wisdom, decided, well, that's a euphemism, that's sort of an informal term, and it's something that we'll be able to clarify in the model rules to more talk about practice as opposed to the formal language of the statute. The subsection below that, capital II, is another transportation method referred to as A plus C plus D, and it involves cost plus project experience and project approach. And this is another ODOT FHWA method that we wanted to clearly call out as not being included within the CNBC method. So despite the fact that the term doesn't appear in this provision, that was the intent of the provision. The fourth item that I'll mention is toward the bottom of page 2, line 23, actually we'll go to line 25. There was some concern by the subcontractor community about this provision. This provision talks about, in a procurement setting, what contract terms will an agency require of a CNBC contractor? And specifically, when you hire a CNBC contractor, they then go out and get subcontractor bids. There's a subcontractor process that happens. And the subcontractor community had been very concerned that they were not being treated fairly. That process would happen and they would not know what was going on. So one of the things we worked on was some language to describe what the contractor will do with subcontractors who are unsuccessful, that have some explanation for those folks as to what happened, who was selected. And so there was great concern in the subcontractor community that that process be explained. So we worked on some of this language, and the current language is the qualification and selection process is described in this subsection. And the key there was the subcontractors wanted to say that what we're talking about here is subsection 3. Even though this is subsection E of the provision, the global subsection that we're referring to is subsection 3, which talks about all these different subcontractor procurement processes. And so there's A, B, C, and D. And the subcontractor community was wanting to make sure that there would be an opportunity for them to hear about all those various different subcontractor selection methods. And Ledge Council has assured us that the reference to this subsection refers to subsection 3, the global subsection, and that we have clarity and that we don't need to get into any more detail there. And I've not heard back from the subcontractor community as to any objections that they have, so I think we have clarity there as well. And otherwise, I think the amendment in global sort of comment is the -4 amendment thoroughly implements the recommended changes that Mr. Vermeulier, my co-chair, and I had developed after comments from our CMGC subcommittee, and the -4 amendments are satisfactory, and we're enthusiastic about them.
Thank you, and I know you're enthusiastic too. though it may not be in your nature. So I do appreciate all the work that all the stakeholders, since Senator Beyer, I, and Representative Wisnett convened this work group to work on this for 2 years to come up with this piece of legislation, though very narrowly focused in the public contracting code, it is still very complex and very important. So I want to thank you for all the time and effort that you put in, and all the other committee members. I see a few people here that participated. So
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Mr. Underwood? I have a few questions for you, but I'll ask them later.
Okay. So.
I just want to make sure we get the right things put on the record for the floor as well, that
thank
would
you,
make
Chair.
You more comfortable. So with that, I'm going to ask Representative Lively for a motion on the Dash 4 amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 254A, dated 5/23/2013.
Representative Lively moves we adopt the A4 amendments to Senate Bill 254, and dated 5/23/2013. Discussion on the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the A4 amendments are adopted. And Representative Lively.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 254A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Lively moves Senate Bill 254 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Representative Johnson.
Briefly, Mr. Chair, I just want to say I think it's a great piece of legislation. I think the work group that was assembled exactly about 2 years ago that began this process, I think, can be a great model for other issues that could be resolved within the industry as well. So, heartily endorse it.
Thank you for the comment. And it was a good process, I think, and very well vetted. Samantha, can we have a vote, please?
Representative Vega Peterson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Excused.
Representative Pettigeyer?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. Senate Bill 254, having received the votes, is passed to the floor. And I think I'm going to take the liberty of carrying this one. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 254. And we will open up a work session on Senate Bill 617A. Bob, give us a description of Senate Bill 617A and the amendment that we're looking at here today.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 617A requires the appraiser certification and licensure board to convene a panel of appraisers to determine whether an objective basis exists to believe that an alleged violation has occurred. The committee has a proposed A5 amendment, which replaces the measure, and would direct the appraiser certification and licensure board to establish a subcommittee of the board to recommend whether objective basis exists to believe that an alleged violation has occurred, would require the subcommittee to report to the board regarding specific violations if the subcommittee recommends that an objective basis exists, and would require the board to adopt rules to implement that subcommittee process. The measure has no revenue impact, and a fiscal statement has been issued for those A5 amendments, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and there is no requirement to send this to Ways and Means.
No.
Thank you. Representative Lively, would you like to make a motion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the Dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 617A, dated 5/23/2013.
Representative Lively moves we adopt the A5 amendments to Senate Bill 617, dated 5/23/13. Discussion on the amendment?
I have a question on the amendment. So,
Kenny Geyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What is the fiscal show? It's not the state would pick it up, the fees would pick it up if there's any additional.
Right. We can have somebody come up that maybe can address how that fiscal works and how it's paid for. Thank you for being here. And if you'd like to introduce yourself for the record, please.
Yes, sir. My name is Bob Keith. I'm the administrator for the Appraiser Certification and Licensure Board.
Thank you. And would you like her to restate the question?
Please.
Thank you. I know the previous fiscal was $125,000, I believe, that would be borne by your licensees. And I haven't actually seen the statement now. Is there any cost to this change?
The difference between the previous fiscal and this one.
Just the difference between how you operate now and this proposed amendment. Is there any fiscal impact?
Not exactly sure how to answer that. The short answer is no. How we have been operating in the past, this bill ends. However, the board, about 30 days before the original bill was dropped, had taken actions to make some corrections on its own, and this bill actually mirrors what those new policies and procedures are.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for the board? Looks like you're off the hook. Thank you very much, committee. And I did, for your knowledge, did run these amendments by the sponsor of the bill, and she was fine with these amendments. And so I decided to proceed when moving this forward. I know there was a lot of questions about the previous previous bill, so I think we've got most of those questions ironed out with the sponsor, and looking forward to passing this bill. So have we actually adopted the amendment yet? No.
There was discussion on the amendment.
We had discussion. Any other discussion on the amendment? Any objection to adopting the amendment? Seeing none, the A5s are adopted to Senate Bill 617. Representative Lively, a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 617 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Lively moves Senate Bill 617A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senate Bill 617A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Thank you, Bob. Discussion on the motion.
I think you averted the heart attack, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your work on this. It's a vast improvement over
yes.
the previous.
Okay. Seeing no discussion, Samantha, can we have a vote?
Representative Vega Peterson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Excused.
Representative Teague Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. Senate Bill 617A. Having received the required votes, it is passed to the floor. Carrier on this particular bill?
I'll carry it. Unless somebody else. Wait, somebody else?
Oh, I wasn't fighting for her. I was just going to
I think she was. I think she was fighting for
it. I think Representative Thatcher did a wonderful
paper,
job.
Rock, paper, scissors?
Yeah.
All right, Representative Thatcher, thanks.
She would do a wonderful job.
Very much. So Representative Thatcher will carry the bill, and I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 617A. And committee, I believe, that concludes our work sessions. We will be having an informational meeting for Tuesday. It's not yet posted. We have invited the Secretary of State and I believe the Governor's Office. To talk to us about the audits on boards and commissions and what that may lend us to looking at in the future. So with that, committee, I'm going to adjourn the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency.